Hey, Drew.
Hey, Mark.
How are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. I've got one big question for you before we get started.
Do I make you horny, baby?
Shoot for the captive ball.
So we're here to talk about one of the greatest spy franchises, in my opinion, of all time. And by that, I mean, obviously,
James Bond.
Austin Powers.
Oh, yeah, Austin Powers.
Austin Powers. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that you brought up James Bond, because Austin Powers, I think you might know, was sort of credited with destroying the James Bond franchise to the point where when the Daniel Craig movies came out, they had to take a very serious tract. If you've ever wondered why it's like a gritty reboot.
I've never thought about that correlation. I've actually kind of appreciated the old campy Bond and wondered why we can't have that anymore.
It was a little bit because Austin Powers just kind of crushed it, right?
Kind of pulled the curtain back and it's like, you can't take it seriously now.
That's exactly right. And of course, at the time too, right? Pierce Brosnan was driving an invisible Aston Martin in like an ice hotel or something.
Oh yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
And so it's kind of fitting that you mentioned Bond, and Austin Powers obviously is a spoof movie of Bond films, of spy genre in general. And I wanted to tie those things together in our conversation today, because speaking of James Bond and Austin Powers famously did a send up of Bond girls, right? The women of James Bond. In the first movie, I don't know if you remember the woman's name that he tries to seduce in like the hot tub.
Oh man, don't make me say it.
Yeah, her name is Alata Vagina.
Yeah.
Come again.
And as a kid, I was like, that's so absurd and ridiculous. And I hadn't watched a number of James Bond movies. I'd seen some of the Pierce Brosnan ones, but I have since gone through and looked at a bunch of the names of women in James Bond films, and they are not that much farther away.
I mean, it starts pretty early. Is this what we're going to get into with Dr. No?
I'm going to give you a list of Bond girl names.
Oh, boy.
And you just tell me if they're real or fake women from James Bond movies. Credit goes to Sporkle, actually, who came up with a quiz like this. And the fake names especially I thought were pretty helpful to come up with. So I've got, I don't know, 15 or so because it's hard to pick.
Okay.
You just tell me real or fake. I didn't write, I should have captured which film they were from.
Okay.
But we could look that up later if you want.
Sure.
Okay, so first one on the list, Honey Rider.
Real.
Real. Do you know the film?
Goldfinger.
I think she's from the first Bond film, so it might be Dr. No.
Oh, okay.
She's like first in the list.
Maybe, okay. I'm just guessing.
Tanya Boddy.
Fake.
That is fake. Candy Gloss.
Fake.
Also fake. 3 for 3 so far. Pussy Galore.
Real, 100%.
Very real. Jane Blondage.
Ooh, too close to Blumfield. Fake.
It is fake. Kissy Suzuki.
Real.
Kissy Suzuki is real. Do you know? I don't know the film.
It's going to be You Only Live Twice, maybe, right? Isn't that the one where you're in Japan?
Yes. I forgot to capture these. Strawberry Fields.
Real.
Penny Lane.
Wait, was I right?
Yes, real.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Strawberry Fields is real.
Penny Lane. Fake.
Fake it is. Holly Goodhead.
Real.
Yes. Chew Me.
Oh my gosh. Fake.
Chew Me is real.
Oh, okay. That's the first one I missed.
That's the first one you've missed. Yeah, yeah. You've an incredible streak right there. Xenia Onatopp.
Real. That's got to be Xenia from GoldenEye.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, Plenty O'Toole.
Oh, my God. Real.
Real it is.
Wow.
You know you're James Bond.
I was just guessing on half of those. I knew Pussy Galore. And Xenia, I kind of guessed, but other than that,
the one that I know for sure which film it is Strawberry Fields is from a Daniel Craig film. She's in Quantum of Solace.
Which one is that?
The redhead.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
Not ringing a bell.
Quantum of Solace is probably the most forgettable of the Craig films, so it's easy to miss that. But yeah, well, I mean, incredibly well done. And, you know, I bring all of that up because, again, we're talking about Austin Powers today, and it seems to me you look back at that and they really weren't so far off when they spoofed some of those names in the first Austin Powers. And then even, you know, you look at Foxy Cleopatra and Beyonce's character in the third one. I forget what Heather Graham's character's name was in the second one. But yeah, they those send-ups were cutting because it was very similar to what you'd see in the film. So when we talk about the Austin Powers pinball machine, it came out in 2001 and it was made by Stern. And its creator is a guy named John Borg. And you might remember John Borg because he also did the Rush pinball machine that we reviewed while ago.
Yeah.
So Borg's been in this industry for a while. Nice to see another machine of his. A couple of details about it before we go and play it. First of all, only 800 of these were produced.
Oh, wow. That's not a lot.
That is a small run. And it came out in June 2001, which was about a year before Goldmember, the third Austin Powers film, came out, and about 2 years after the second one, Spy Who Shagged Me, came out. So this was about the height of Austin Powers' popularity.
And they only sold 800.
Only 800.
Yeah.
As far as designs and objectives on this machine, this is about as straightforward as a pinball machine gets, in my opinion. The idea is for any shot that exists, and there are two ramps, two orbits, and like a center objective, which we'll talk about in a second. For any number of those, you're basically hitting that shot X number of times. It appears that four is the magic number for most of these. And then that unlocks a mode or a bonus.
Okay.
So the center target is a time machine. It's kind of got a black and white spiral effect. And you hit the time machine four times, you get a time machine multi-ball. There is Fat Bastard is in the left ramp, and there's a toilet there.
Oh, I wonder why.
Yep. Yeah. You hit the toilet four times and you start a multi-ball. And then any of the loops or like the outer loop is mini me, you hit it four times, there's a hurry up shot. Most of the other ones are hurry up shots.
You know, I'm a sucker for a target that I can just hit and get a multi-ball. I don't like to think about it. I just want to hit the same thing three times and get
you've
a multi-ball.
Now you've got two.
Perfect.
Thanks, John Borg.
Perfect.
There is also a scoop. And at some point, you can unlock what's called the mojo mode, help Austin get his mojo back.
Okay.
You hit the scoop, and then out of the center of the playfield arises Dr. Evil. And you bash the ball into Dr. Evil during this like mojo multi-ball mode for big points.
Cool.
And so those are your main kind of objectives. As far as gimmicks go, I think the time machine, the toilet, and Dr. Evil coming out of the floor are going to be the big obvious gimmicks that exist there. And then there's just like a lot of toys to see. So Fat Bastard, Mini-Me's hanging on to something. And I think it looks like the Austin Powers toy moves. So we'll see how that works. Any questions before we go check it out?
No, let's go.
Allow myself to introduce myself. Austin Danger Powers.
I put the gar in Swinger, baby!
All right, welcome back. How did you feel about Austin Powers?
I think it's a pretty cool machine. It's got really on-brand art. That's the first thing that stood out to me is just like it's bright. It's psychedelic, baby.
Very psychedelic, that's true. My first thought is that it's like they wanted the rights to the Austin Powers theme. The soul bossa nova, or whatever that's called, the Quincy Jones tune, but it's like they couldn't get it. And so, like, the music is just like this weird vamping fake bossa nova beat.
Oh, yeah.
That you just couldn't, that was like my biggest takeaway was like, please secure the rights to your music.
Yeah,
I
couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I think you're right. Like, I was getting shades of that music, but not quite.
And it's just kind of like, it would never, like, it was just like, yeah, and it never went anywhere. Like, it never took you anywhere musically interesting, and it was just, after a while, you're like, please stop. And my other big impression, and this is specific to the machine we played, is that it looks its age. Like, the one we played was a little bit worn down and has seen a lot of action, I think, because it was not...
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that's emblematic of Austin Powers himself, right? You know, he's been around a while. And no, but that's true, and it's very hard sometimes to separate a given machine that we're playing that maybe is in a little bit of disrepair from the design of the machine overall. I tried to, but I'll admit it did kind of affect me on this one.
Yeah, and that's fair. It's interesting, though, you mentioned that. It's a little bit like Austin Powers. I had this thought as we played it and as we've come back. The first Austin Powers came out in 1997, and Austin is frozen in 1967 and gets thawed out in 30 years later in 97.
I don't like where this is going.
Yeah. You know how far away we are from 97? Almost 30 years.
Yeah.
So we're about time. What that means is we're due for a reboot where we have an Austin Powers-like character frozen in 1994 and is then thawed in 2024.
The thing is, that doesn't even sound all that implausible, right? Like, imagine some like punk skateboarder with like shaggy hair and like a goatee.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, he's never used a cell phone before. Like,
Google has not been existing.
Like, I guess
Wi-Fi doesn't exist.
Ooh, wow. I thought that was just like,
I think it was invented in 97.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could happen, man.
I'm the Matt Damon Saving Private Ryan meme where he just ages in real time.
You age in like 30 seconds. Yeah. Yep.
So initial impressions aside, we regularly review each machine under kind of three criteria: the design of the game, you know, how novel is the design, how fun and engaging is the design, the theme, how well does the intellectual property being used or the theme that they're trying to convey work in the machine in terms of shots that you're being asked to do, like do you feel you're part of that world, and fun, you know, do you want to keep coming back and engaging with this pinball machine, would you recommend it to somebody else? We rate those things on a scale of five, so we'll just take them one by one. So from a design point of view, I'll get the discussion started. There's nothing special here, right? This is what I would expect out of any, what I would call modern pinball machine, is you've got two orbits, you've got two ramps, and you've got a couple of things to hit. Usually there's a scoop as well. The biggest eye catchers are the things that you want to bash and get you early multi-balls, which is the toilet and the time machine spinny thing. But even they don't really jump out, you know, too much. There's nothing super unique about those. Like, there's just a sensor, I think, on the rim of the toilet that, like, when you hit it, like, just increments up to four and then grants you something. Like, there's no kind of cool mechanism there. And the most interesting part of the design, I thought, was when you do get the mojo mode and, like, Dr. Evil rises out of the center of the floor. The only other machine I've seen something like that from is Iron Man.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably has to be later. I think that must have come out later. But that's itself is, like, it's kind of a cool gimmick, but it's not, like, itself like a huge novelty that like elevates the designer in any particular way for me.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I think I first started noticing this on some machines maybe, you know, pretty recently, and now I can't stop noticing it. There's almost like a standard sort of like eight shot layout where if you took like a line from the flippers to where your target or your ramp or your loop or whatever is, and it just sort of fans out, you know, evenly spaced out eight shots.
Yep.
And I wonder, is that some golden number? Is that the most you can reasonably fit into a pinball layout? You know, it's like two scoops, two ramps, two loops, and then two other kind of big targets like the toilet and one other. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if that is like a sweet spot too for like things you could control but are like reasonable for an average person to come and try and execute on.
Yeah, I'm not bashing the layout. I think it was inoffensive and accessible, but now I can't unsee it, that it's just like, that's just like the recipe for every pinball machine. It's almost like.
Yeah.
So that was kind of one thing that I noticed, is that like the most you can squeeze in. I don't know. I did like the modes on there. Like you talked about hitting, you know, the same shot four times, and then you get kind of like a little hurry up. I thought that was simple but effective, a nice way to kind of add some stakes to the game. You can control when and how you kind of score your points. So I like that. One thing I really didn't particularly care for was the skill shot at the beginning. Do you remember the skill shot?
Vaguely, right? Like the launches up into the top right, and I think there are just two lanes that it
there's
can drop
two
down.
Lanes, and you hit the lit lane, and you get the points. And so, like to start off, you know,
oh yeah, and it was big. It was like a big. It felt like a big multi like skill.
Right. I think the first couple of games that I played, most of my points were from the skill shot, and that doesn't feel great because to start, it's like a 50-50 whether you're going to get that shot. And then to add on to it, you can just move the target lane with the flippers. So it's like a guaranteed, you know, 150,000 points or however many.
I think it was 7 million.
It was millions. The scale was. It was like a significant number of points just like for free. And it made me feel bad. I guess it made me feel bad because, like, it's probably not meant to be a significant part of your points. And in my case, it was. So,
yeah. Well, so then in some ways it would be doing its job. Like, the problem is you have, like, the curse of knowledge of knowing that, like, that's the bulk of your points. If you didn't care at all about pinball and you came in and you did that, you'd be like, hell yeah, I had, like, the greatest game ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's an appeal for the casuals. And I we'll talk about this, I think, a little bit later. I think this machine does something really well to embrace a casual pinball audience. And I wonder if that's a little bit because of, you know, I think the late 90s, early 2000s, pinball had to sort of reinvent itself, right? Arcades had kind of gone out of vogue. And you saw, like, a lot of, I think, machines trying different gimmicks. And so I wondered if something that was just, like, very, very straightforward was meant to appeal to both pinball diehards and be broadly accessible.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It really does sort of skirt that line pretty well of being, like, a pinball player's pinball machine, because it's got a lot of the hallmarks of, like, a good classic pinball machine, but it's also very accessible. And obviously the brand tie-in with Austin Powers is going to draw people in. So it's a good point, and I respect it and its place in history. I think it's
yeah. Good. That said, so out of a score of 5, I actually graded this pretty low because there's nothing that elevates it in any particular way. I think it's just below average. So I put it at a 2 out of 5.
Yeah, pretty reasonable. I gave it a 3, which is, you know, still in that same kind of average, nothing super special part. I felt like it was a good game, but not a great one.
Yeah, yeah. And something makes me wonder, did, like, John Borg, did Stern know this when they designed it and prototyped it, where they were like, and we'll just push out 800 of them. Like, that's such a small release number. It would be probably useful to go back and look at other machines released that year and see what were production numbers like, because it just feels so low. I feel like most production levels are close to 10,000, if not, you know, multiple thousands.
Yeah, I think thousands for sure. Maybe not 10, but, like, you know, maybe it was at a time when they just needed to put out a pinball machine to keep the factory open, to keep people in their jobs.
That could be.
And, you know, thank you for doing that. I think it's important that, like, we have this continuous tradition of pinball manufacturing. And
yeah. And it came out, you know, in just since it came out in 01, it's worth noting it came out in 01 in the summertime. So it wasn't, like, impacted. It's not like the production run, I think, was, I guess maybe it could have been, right? Because I guess if it was released first in June 2001, production could have been impacted by the fallout that came with 9/11 in terms of stagnation in the economy and people not feeling like they want to go buy something fun.
I don't want to blame it all on 9/11, but it
certainly didn't help. Kind of a worthwhile side note. The first time I went to the doctor for, like, anxiety to get prescribed something to help with that, she was like, so what do you think brought that on? And I, like, being a smart ass, was like, I don't want to blame it all on 9/11. And she, like, her eyes popped out a little bit. She was like, that's a new one. I've never heard 9/11 blamed for anxiety. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. That's from The Office. Isn't it The Office?
Arrested Development.
Oh, I think Michael Scott says something like that too at one point. Oh. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. Wherever that joke comes from, Arrested Development, I guess, is what I was tapping into. And then I was like, sorry, this is, like, a real serious thing. I should probably.
Yeah, I'm questioning your doctor now. Has she never seen somebody use humor to deflect? Like, that's a pretty standard thing, I think.
I think she's just so used to treating people like what they're telling her, because it's, like, a serious occasion to be like, I'm not well. Let me deflect. Anyway, moving into theme, take me on your journey of how you thought the theme of Austin Powers tied into this machine.
Well, I'll just say, like, the art, I love it. I think my only note is that it's, like, groovy, you know, it's psychedelic, it fits. The music, it tried, wasn't great, but, like, the art on the playfield I thought was really cool. You know, I wish that maybe it had more of, like, a pinball machine style, because I think some of the, like, decals on there just felt almost like photographic. Like,
yes.
You know, not like the stylized pinball art that you usually see.
Yes.
So that felt maybe, like, a little phoned in. So not great, but, like, the colors were really cool. I love the toys. I thought they were really cool. I think, yeah, anytime you get, like, custom manufactured physical objects, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, other than that, yeah, I think that, like, it's good art, but not great art. Really annoying music that needs to change more. But, like, it fits Austin Powers, so that's cool.
Yeah, I think the music, you know, probably took this down a point for me. But Agreed. And you don't see machines this colorful that lean into like the 60s hippie psychedelic flower power look, and like literal flower power, right? There is just, there's flower designs on the flippers. There's flowers on the play field all over the place. Like very, very Austin Powers and very, yeah, groovy, I think is a great word to
describe. Yeah, I wonder if even in the 60s there were those, or was that like, was that too counterculture back then for the conservative pinball?
That's a great question. I don't know enough about that era of pinball to even know if that would be a thing that would have been on any machines then. I also thought, you know, I loved the toys as well, and I really liked the call-outs in the machine being Austin Powers movie quotes and whatever. And I think what I especially liked about it is that it didn't lean into things that were too niche, right, necessarily. And, like, that helps looking back at it. At a machine that's 20 plus years old and a movie series that's 20 plus years old, where I think someone unfamiliar with Austin Powers now could go in there and kind of be like, get the point of it, right? Yeah. With the callouts and like kind of get the message. And I think that's a success for any IP based machine. You have to think about how does this work for people unfamiliar with your brand?
Man, I think I've got an idea for like a bonus episode. Gen Z plays Austin Powers, or even better, Gen Z watches Austin Powers, to be followed by Gen Z cancels Austin Powers.
Yeah, I'm sure that middle one already exists. Somewhere someone has monetized like the youth watching movies from the 90s, and they'll be like, why didn't they just use a cell phone for everything? Okay, that's like the most boomer take I've ever had.
Yeah.
Out of theme, so for me, this is an average theme. I just gave it 3 out of 5.
Yeah, same, 3 out of 5, no notes.
And lastly, the fun factor. So I'll kick us off here. I think for its age, I think the flow is very engaging, even though it's a very kind of vanilla standard layout. I like that the shots are hittable and the objectives are knowable and obvious. That really works for me. And I think that plays into something I mentioned earlier, where I think that works well for people who are pinball diehards, right? There's like a clear progression of things you want to accomplish, and you can probably get most of those if you're pretty proficient in pinball. But for like a newbie, someone just figuring out pinball for the first time, this could be like a spark machine, right? Like where suddenly it all makes sense because it's so incredibly obvious on what you want to be accomplishing. That said, the music is absolutely trash. That vamping bossa nova has got to go. I mean, if you didn't secure the rights to the Austin Powers theme, then you just needed to just not have music. Those are my notes on film.
So what'd you give it?
I gave it a 3 out of 5. I thought it was perfectly average.
All right, yeah. I think for me, this category is the one that is just like the most ineffable. It's hard to really describe why I gave a score in particular. I think I just go with my gut feel and then try and justify it afterward.
Sure.
And on this game, this machine, I just wasn't feeling it, man. Like, I see what you're saying about how this could be a spark machine and get somebody into it. But, like, could is, I think, the operative word there. I never got into a groove playing this machine. Like, it just felt like the shots weren't hitting for me. There certainly was no sense of, like, flow between shots. And I think a lot of that did come down to the fact that this machine was not in great shape. Not great. I felt like it kind of lost its mojo, needed a little something-something to pick it back up again. So I will say there's definitely potential, but I just didn't get it. So I ended up giving it a 2.
Okay. And I think, you know, that's fair. I conversely really had a lot of good success with the game, and that's a nice transition into the fact that as we look at these machines, we play some games to kind of feel out those three areas of focus, and then we do a little competition. We have 3 games against each other. Although I should note, we each get to play all 3 games by ourselves in a row, because that way you can kind of lock in and not have to wait for someone else to drain a ball to like lose your mojo.
Or steal a multi-ball.
Or steal a multi-ball. Not a problem in Austin Powers, but past episodes you'll understand why we're frustrated. I actually only played 2 games, because at a certain point I got to my second game and I said, you know what? I don't think I'm getting better than this. I'm just going to stop right there.
And what was that?
My high score was 134,487,680.
Wow. Yeah. I never cracked the 100 mil mark. In fact, I think my best game was about half your best game, 67,377,000. Not much to say, man.
No. You know, sometimes sometimes it do be like that. But, you know, much like Austin Powers, maybe you just have to go back in time and find your mojo.
Oh, behave.